Hello, and welcome to the Screaming Into the Mic podcast, a medium normalizing the expression of women's anger. Soraya Chimali writes, "Gendered ideas about anger make us women question ourselves, doubt our feelings, set aside our needs, and renounce our own capacity for moral conviction. This podcast is where I take a stand and say no more through creating a safe space for women to share their rage in a public forum. I'm your host, Mary Abdul-Malik Neal. I'm a musician, community developer, and feminist activist. Join us for each episode as we talk with women about the struggles they face in work and life. We begin this podcast this season chatting with women in the arts. Thanks for tuning in. For this episode, we're in conversation with Kate Camo McHugh, who is a dance and theater artist from Waterloo, Ontario. She is interested in artistically exploring concepts such as migration, belonging, and the intersection of art and care, all themes she feels intimately connected to in her daily life. Highlights for Kate over the past year include working with Dance Makers and Can-Asian Dance, participating in a workshop of Julie Tamiko Manning's new play, Mizu Shubai, Tableau d'Hote Theater, and performing theater for early years with Cosmic Fishing Theater. Currently, she's working on her show, 20 Grains of Rice, an exploration of Japanese-Canadian identity, cultural loss, retention, and creation. Kate holds a BFA from Toronto Metropolitan University in theater performance dance. This is Screaming Into the Mic. Hi, Kate, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today.
I'm so excited because you're just coming off. I know where this episode's going to air a little bit later, but you're just coming off of Impact 2023 and your presentation that you did there. Tell our listeners, before we jump into that, let's tell our listeners a little bit about your artistic practice.
Oh, sure. Well, I am a dancer and theater artist based here in the region of Waterloo. I primarily worked as a dancer for most of my career, but now I'm venturing more into theater and text-based work. It's really exciting.
Awesome. And tell us a little bit about the production that you just had for Impact 2023.
I have been working on a piece called 20 Grains of Rice for the past almost 2 years on and off. It started during the pandemic, and it is my first time creating my own work. So not being hired by someone else to tell their stories, but actually telling my own story. And the first time producing something myself as well. So it has been an adventure. I've learned a lot. The story dives into my identity as a Japanese Canadian woman 2 generations after Japanese internment during World War II. And I tell the story through dance and through text, and I have really beautiful projections and music as well.
And tell us about that process where you dived into your identity and brought that into your work.
Oh, okay. Well, it started in 2021. I got a residency from the National Arts Center. They had some money left over that they were supposed to be using for shows, but everything got canceled because of the pandemic. So they had this money and they decided that what they would do is give it to artists across Canada to work on any project that they wanted. And the beautiful thing about this residency, it was called the Free Reign Residency, was that you didn't have to have a completed project. So it was really money and space and time to work on whatever you wanted. So I thought about it and I realized I had never explored my own heritage artistically. It was something that I was always very interested in. I grew up in Elmira, which is very close to where we are now in Kitchener. in the 90s. And my family was one of maybe three families that were not white at the time. So growing up in Elmira, it was pointed out to me by other kids very early on that I looked different physically. So because of that, I became very interested in what it meant to be Japanese and what Japanese Canadian meant. But I had never taken that interest and inserted it into my artistic practice. So that's what I decided to do. And specifically, I looked at what parts of Japanese culture still remained in my family after five generations of being in Canada, and what parts of Japanese culture had disappeared through the five generations, and why did they disappear, and when did they disappear? So that's how the piece started.
And then what did you learn along the way?
Oh, goodness. Well, I learned a lot of family history that I didn't know. This was not something that my grandparents ever talked about with me. My grandparents were the ones who went through internment and survived internment. My mom talked about it a little bit with us as a kid, but I think she also didn't know a lot about her parents' story and what had happened during the war. So amazingly, there is a website called The Landscape of Injustices. It was made by the University of Victoria, and the website has compiled all the documents from internment. So I can go on there and just search my family's name, and all of their documents come up. Their registration card, Japanese Canadians had to register with the RCMP, are there, all of their property that they had owned and then that was eventually taken by the government and never given back. So I learned a lot of specific facts, which it was a lot to process.
It was
a lot. Like it had my great grandfather's name and like the laundry machine, the telephone, his typewriter. All of these items that were taken away. And one interesting thing I saw on my great grandmother's document, her name was Kiku, the person who filled it out, because my great grandmother didn't write or really speak English. They put her name as Kate. So no one's ever mentioned that before, probably because nobody knew. So I learned a lot about family history. I got to spend some time with my great uncle. Both of my grandparents have passed away, but my great uncle he's 100 and has an amazing memory and has told me a lot of stories about what happened during that time. Difficult things to hear, but I think it's important that I learn it so that I can pass it on to my children so that the next generation doesn't forget what happened. And then artistically, I got to work with some amazing artists who really mentored me and handled the subject and the piece with such care and kindness. Andrea Nan, she's a dancer and choreographer in Toronto, came to Kitchener. She wouldn't use the word mentor, but I think traditionally or colonially, it would be a mentor. She likes to use the title creative instigator. So she helped me find ways.
That.
Yeah. Andrea is amazing. If you don't know her work, look it up. She has a dance company called Dreamwalker Dance. And her work often combines dance and text together. That's really why I wanted to work with Andrea. But so as a creative instigator, she helped me find authentic ways to tell my story and to find authenticity in the choreography I was creating. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been such a journey.
It was. It's still going. Oh. It's not over yet.
Oh no, I don't think this journey's ever over.
I know. That's so
true. Once you start this journey, it just keeps on going.
Yes, that is very true.
So that being said, I'm kind of curious. Going from that little girl growing up in Elmira, one of three, you know, racialized families, to being on the stage and sharing your story in 2023 with our community through the Impact Festival. How do you feel about your place in this community as an artist and where you're at?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Sorry. Did I not mention that we don't really ask any fluffy questions here?
Yeah. I don't know. So when I moved, I grew up in Elmira, and like my goal growing up was to get as far away as possible. That was like literally my goal. It started.
Well, you made it a few bus rides down.
That's so funny. I knew in grade 8 I did not want to go to the high school in Elmira, so I transferred to Eastwood, had a really good experience there, went to university in Toronto, and then I spent the next 15 years living overseas. So I was gone quite a long time, had a lot of my career in Argentina, but got really burnt out by the time I was about 31. Mm. I was tired of going to auditions. I was tired of projects ending or like not being paid for work. It was really a struggle. And like the final thing was that I was working in a theater company that was a good experience because I got to travel through South America and work with actors and technicians that I really cared about. We were a little touring company, but there was a lot of emotional and verbal abuse in the company from people who had the power. So the directors, the owner of the company, and we would be in rehearsal. We had a fight coach. We were doing Romeo and Juliet, and we had it was another play, I can't remember, but I had to do a scene with sword fighting, and the fight coach was just so verbally abusive that I got to the point where I knew I didn't want to do this anymore. So the point is, when I moved back to Kitchener in 2019, I had stopped working in the arts completely. I had started teaching English as a second language. And when I got back to Kitchener, it never even occurred to me that I could have an artistic career here. I thought if I wanted to be an artist, I needed to go to Toronto, and that was it. And then I had a baby, and then that also added to the impossibility of being an artist. In KWU. So for me, the journey started really slowly. I was actually at my mom's hockey game, which is another story. But
sounds like a fun story.
Yeah. My mom, who plays hockey, she's a senior citizen. But I was at a community center at my mom's hockey tournament, and I saw a sign on the board for a project called Dear Mother Community Project, and it was by Greenlight Arts, and they were working with a playwright named Intisar Awis, who is local but works mostly in Toronto and creates really beautiful work. She's a playwright and a dramaturg. They were supporting her play called, I think it's called Motherhood. It's not in production yet, but I think we'll be in production soon. So there was a bunch of moms who met at the Chandler Mowat Community Center through Greenlight Arts, and it was a paid opportunity. And we met with a facilitator from Toronto, with Intisar and Matt and Karen from Greenlight Arts, and just wrote stories about motherhood. And one of the first things we did, I'll never forget, was we created community guidelines. And I had never experienced that before. Now every space I go into sort of has community, like we create community guidelines together, or at least it's talked about. But like in when I was in Argentina, or even when I was working in Toronto, that never would have happened. There was no culture of care.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was something that made me stop and think like, oh, you can create art. There's a different way to create art. Mm-hmm. People don't have to be screaming at you to
yes,
be productive.
That would be good yes. to not have people screaming at you. But yeah. I totally understand where you're coming from.
Yes. So there are definitely a lot of challenges in being an artist here. I think the first thing that, for me, that comes to mind is money. Mm-hmm. Being a full-time artist. I've had a lot of opportunities here in Kitchener-Waterloo that I'm grateful for and has given me a chance to go and work in Toronto or Montreal that I might not necessarily have had if I lived in Toronto, just because there's so many people. So I start here, create some of the work, and then get better funding in Toronto. So for example, with 20 Grains of Rice, it started here with the NAC, and MT Space was a big supporter. But then I used that to get a residency with Dance Makers, which is a company in Toronto, and did most of my rehearsals in Toronto because they can afford that.
Oh, wow.
So I guess being a full-time artist here in the region is tricky, mm-hmm. money-wise. And if I'm like completely honest, I have a partner who has a job. So I earn money, but also if I don't get that grant, I don't have to worry about not eating. I would be sad because I wouldn't be able to create the art that I want to do, but I don't have to worry about being unhoused. And in my 20s and early 30s, that was not the case because I didn't have a partner. So I think if I wasn't with my spouse, I don't know how viable it would be for me to be a full-time artist.
Yes, that seems to be a recurring theme in these conversations, for sure. I find it interesting that the strategy you've developed, where you start your work off here and then go to Toronto, where there's the resources and capacity to be able to like build it more to fruition. That's a really interesting approach, and one that I don't think we've had in conversation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes artists do take their work and do installations or, you know, go down to Toronto and do that thing. But this is an interesting concept of starting the seed here and then going. And for this journey, you were doing that while you were pregnant.
Yeah, I was. So I had 1 week in March. It was at the National Ballet of Canada. They opened their studios to choreographers and dancers. And I was like just pregnant then. And then I went back for the month of April, and I was a little bit more pregnant. I mean, like even for example, with the show at Impact, the amount of money that MT Space could offer me to do the show was not enough to do the show.
Right.
I have to pay my collaborators. I have a sound designer. I have a collaborator who does the projections, and she also plays the violin. I had to hire a stage manager to call all of the cues for the show. MT Space provided some things like technicians and a production manager, Cameron Slip, who helped me a lot with the show, but the fee that they gave me would not have covered all of those people that I needed to pay and paying myself, hopefully.
Right?
Hopefully there's money to pay myself.
You kind of want to pay yourself.
I know. And usually I feel like I do have a very solid line with paying myself, like, because I need the money.
Good. Yes.
But, like, I don't know. For this show, I still need to do it.
How did you, how did you cover the costs that were incurred then that weren't covered by your fee?
So I had some OAC recommender grants for this project. So that covered it. And then I had a little bit of Region of Waterloo Arts Fund money as well. Mostly I had to use that money for my rehearsals in Toronto, like going back and forth, accommodation, and even just like preparing to go to Toronto because I needed to write a script before that was done. So I did have some money left over, but to be honest, I haven't actually balance the budget yet. So
okay. We'll cross our fingers for you.
Yes. All you collaborators out there, you're all getting paid. That's fine. I know I have enough money for that. So hopefully I'm getting paid.
Oh, I get that completely. Yes. Right. And that is
definitely a recurring theme that we hear here. Like what I've heard in these conversations where it's like a gigging society for artists. Like it's one grant to the other and one show to the other. And hopefully when people hear this and they understand the challenges, then we could maybe make a bit of a change in that culture. That being said, I do want to go back a little bit to the conversation that you had around incorporating motherhood into your artistic practice. So I love that you were part of that production where they brought mothers together and that you're still going strong as a dancer, nonetheless. Very pregnant doing your during the last your last production. So I do like to keep listeners know I like to bring in quotes from feminist authors into these conversations. And I found one from Gloria Steinem that I think would really be great for us to maybe like have a chat about. But she says, "But when mother is a verb, as in to be mothered and to mother, then the very best of human possibilities come into our imaginations. To mother is to care about the welfare of another person as much as one's own. To mother depends on empathy and thoughtfulness, noticing and caring. To mother creates the only pairing in which the older and the younger, the strong and the weak, are perfectly matched. Mothering is also about free will. One can be forced to become a mother, but one cannot be forced to mother."
That's a great quotation.
It really resonated when we started, when I was reading a little bit about what you were, some of the things that you've done and how you've talked about in past interviews, how motherhood has changed your way that you approach your practice. I am curious as to, now that you're going through it a second time, how has becoming a mother really changed your outlook and your approach?
Well, I think I've learned to be a little gentler and kinder to myself, to not expect perfection from every aspect of my artistic practice, and also to lean on other people. I think during the pandemic, I was creating alone in my apartment.
Oh,
we were in an apartment at that time, and I don't know. And I had just had a baby. My first child was born 3 months before the pandemic. So it was beautiful because we were all together, my spouse, my child, and myself, but also like very, very difficult.
Too bad the listeners can't see the face that I'm giving you, because I'm like, yes, I understand. Fully.
Yes.
I had two kids in school and working, two working parents trying to like, yep.
Yeah. So I guess during that time, Pat the Dog Theater Creation was trying to run their festival called Femme Folk Fest. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, very quickly, Lisa, the artistic director, had to go from it being all in person to being online. And one of the workshops that she had was a choreographic-based workshop with a local dancer named Tara Butler. And because it was suddenly online and not in a dance studio, I was able to participate in this. And it was really funny, though. I emailed Tara. I didn't know her at the time. Now we've become really close. But, and I just said, I just had a baby. I really want to do this. But like 1 hour, it was a 3 hour workshop, like once a week for 5 weeks. And 1 hour into your workshop, I'm going to have to go nurse my baby and put her to sleep.
And, yeah.
And that was just the reality. And I remember I was so nervous because, I mean, Tara Butler, like beautiful ballerina from Toronto, was like the head of her company. I thought, oh, she's going to think I'm just like, this is really absurd. Who leaves a class to go nurse their child? But she wrote back and said, oh, I have been there. Like, absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. And that was another moment where I was like, oh, like maybe it is possible to do mothering and to be an artist if you find the right people to be in the room with you. So I think I just know now, like, there are spaces that I want to be in and spaces that I don't want to be in. And I'm almost 40, so it's taken me a long time to figure that out. But yeah, that has been one of the biggest changes to my artistic practice. Really knowing when to say no and knowing that there are certain people that, like, they're making beautiful art, but they're just not the collaborators for me.
Yeah, that boundary work is always, oh, yeah. And especially as I get it, especially as a mother is, you know, like, I got to be able to balance the schedule with the fact that I still have to pick up my kids. Like, there have been times, it's so funny you say that, because I was in the middle of rehearsals for a theater production I was in, and the school called me and was basically like, okay, so a sewer pipe burst and there's no water left, like there's no water being run to the school, and you have to come pick up your kids. And I'm like, I still have like an hour and a half left of this rehearsal. And thankfully, like you said, I'm working with collaborators that totally understand that these things come up, and it was fine and we were able to work it out. But yes, like, you just need to, because you never know.
Absolutely. That's so funny.
The things that you get to look forward to when they start going to school.
Oh, yes. Oh, lovely.
That's funny. But I'm really glad that you were able to find those spaces. And it, again, like I was saying, in terms of the gigging, like, culture, I think that also the mothering culture in the arts does need some change and some shift to allow for this opportunity, as opposed to people who are in the sort of baby-making stages of their lives have to step away from this work because the hours and the time and it just doesn't align. Mm-hmm. So I'm really great. I'm really happy to hear that you have found collaborators and collaborators in this community as well. So that's amazing.
Yeah, there's actually, I want to give a shout out to a group called Theatre Direct. They're in Toronto, and they've created an organization called Balancing Act. And I got this random message from someone on Instagram. I had created a piece, a dance piece with my child, actually, and she saw it and sent me a piece on it, just like an unsolicited message on Instagram saying, like, hi, I work for Balancing Act, and we have these affinity groups where artist parents meet, and it would be really great if you could come check it out. And then I realized it was from a woman named Susie Burpee, who's actually a very well-known choreographer and dancer. And I thought, is this spam? Is this really Susie Burpee? But it was. And so Balancing Act is an organization created purely to support artist caregivers.
So amazing.
Yes. And they are really advocating for artists who are parents or caregivers to anyone. And they are trying to change how the industry is run. And one of the things that I really appreciate about them is they have these affinity groups you can go to. It's not that often. I think it's maybe once a month, but you just go, it's on Zoom, and it's like all these artist parents, and we just talk about whatever is on our minds, and I find it very, very helpful. But something else that I've noticed more in companies in Toronto, but starting to trickle down here, is offering artists a stipend for childcare.
Really?
Yeah. So with my residency with Dance Makers, I was given a set amount of money to pay for my child's childcare. Sorry, pregnancy brain. Sometimes I'm like, what's the word?
No worries.
I totally get that too.
So, yeah. So that's something that I have seen in a few contracts that I've done recently where this extra money, actually, so two contracts that I've done, both with companies in Toronto, they've given me a set amount to pay for childcare, which is cool.
That warms my heart.
Yeah.
And also a bit revolutionary since, you know, we have local politicians who've had to step back because government won't even provide childcare expenses so that they can serve the citizens of this community.
Yes,
so
she was my representative. I was very sad about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that that's amazing. And I'm hoping that, you know, companies in the area are thinking about this too and jumping on there to like be part of that type of movement, because I think it's important. And, you know, whoever it is that's doing the caregiving is like, you know, when they have to remove themselves from the talent pool, it just means that we're less vibrant of a community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not like this is like a 1 year thing, right? Like when you're caring, whether if it's an older adult or a child, it's not like a short-term thing. Like this is a whole lifestyle change. So if we don't acclimate and we don't like accommodate for those things, then we're losing a lot of people who could be contributing to our artistic community.
Yes, definitely.
All right. I'm going to ask, so that our listeners know, what's on the horizon for you now? What's coming up? What can people, are we doing 20 grains of rice at a different?
Yes. I mean, hopefully. I haven't made set plans mostly because I'm about to go on maternity leave.
Which is totally understandable.
Yes. But I will, after I have the baby, be doing some more grant writing and figuring out what the next step of the project is. But the idea is to finish it. It's not a fully finished script yet. And then work with the director and hopefully a set designer, and then bring the piece to more audiences.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah. So can people follow you on social for that or on your website? Where's a good place for people to reach you?
Oh, sure. I think Instagram's probably the best one.
We will definitely put a link in the show notes for that so that people are able to follow you. Kate, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for this really important conversation about motherhood and the arts and just caregiving in the arts. And I wish you all the best in your next step of your mothering process and your journey.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Mary. This has been really lovely.
Thanks for joining us for this conversation. To learn more about how to connect with our guests, as well as resources mentioned during the episode, check out the show notes. If you are enjoying this podcast and are a woman local to the region of Waterloo looking for a safe place to release your anger, check out our Facebook group, Screaming Into the Void, Waterloo Region. The link is in the show notes as well. Don't forget to tune in for our next episode as we continue to explore the journey of women in the arts.